The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Oh my God, we're live on the internet coming to you cordless from downtown Minneapolis, Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's 11:02 on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 on the West Coast, and 10:02 where I'm sitting here in flyover country. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to this, another edition of Jim Peters at Night. I think it's show number 27. I'm not sure. I should go back and count. I try to count every week or so. I don't know. I'm in a good mood tonight. I am. I'm awake, and I don't know why. You know, a lot of times I'm not awake, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm getting into a rhythm after doing this. We're in our ninth week here. We started on July 31st, first show, then second show on August 1st. So basically, you know, like 2 months, I'm getting into a rhythm. It occurred to me today, this is the first time I've done any sort of broadcasting Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday. You know, and I'll tell you, this is the reason we don't do Friday. First of all, because you're all drinking, so nobody's going to watch. And secondly, it's because if you've ever done this before, it's the fifth show every week that will kill your ass. And I know that from experience. I was going to say it's the first time I've done weekday broadcasting in about 30 years. I did podcasts before, I did radio shows previously, but they were all either weekly or every other day or something like that, you know, just a weird schedule. And I did an interview talk show here on public television in Minneapolis for 3 years. That was weekly. Three guests every week. It was just, you know, whoever it was, you know, I was very happy and pleased with that. That started as a show about the arts about in here in Minneapolis, because I've been involved in classical music most of my career. And I started this show, and it was just about arts. And these guys said, well, you're really good at interviewing people. So let's just open it up. And we did. It was pretty much anybody. So, yeah, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. I'm awake tonight. Okay, so what do you want to know? This is what you want to know. Tomorrow, our guest is going to be Jeff Meyer, CEO and publisher of Conk News. That's the terrific conservative news aggregator at conk.news, conk.news. Check that out. Honestly, it's the only news source you'll ever need. They have about 100 different websites. They're piping in there every day. All the major ones, a lot of the minor ones, a lot of things you've maybe never heard of. They're all like basically on one page. It's fantastic. It's basically what Drudge tried to do 30 years ago and didn't have the technology to do. Now they do. So check that out. He's going to be here tomorrow, and I know we're going to talk to him. He has a couple of things you want to talk to him. I definitely want to ask him about the whole thing about Speaker McCarthy. The thing about Jeff, now Jeff's been doing a podcast for about 2-3 years, and I'm not certain if I got this right. I think he's going to can it. I'm not sure, but he's been very successful. He's always got a unique take on everything, and that's the reason I love talking to him. It's fantastic. So tune in for that. Next Tuesday, Nathan Wooster from the Epoch Times is going to be here. He's both a political reporter for the Epoch Times, and his specialty is environment and energy. And so he has all sorts of shit to say about the climate change crap. And I've interviewed him before, and I know he thinks it's crap. I know that. Anyway, apparently he was at the Republican debate last Wednesday, so we want to ask him about that too. Got a lot of other people coming up. I booked Larry Newman's coming back. Now, Larry Newman was he's coming back on the 23rd, Monday the 23rd. He was on the Bigfoot show we did. As a matter of fact, he basically arranged for that. So he's a Bigfoot investigator for the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, which means he's about as legit as a Bigfoot investigator you can get. But the other thing is, his day job is he's a bail bondsman. As a matter of fact, I think he is the president oh God, if I'm wrong about this, correct me. I think he's the president of the Missouri Bail Bondsman Association. I think, I'm not sure, or he was. We'll have to ask him about that. We want to talk to him about cashless bail. So this is going to be complete. This is not going to be about Bigfoot. Well, we want to talk to him about, because he has a lot of thoughts on this, having worked in the trenches on that for a long time. And I got a few other people lined up for the next couple weeks. We're starting to book guests now up ahead. And I'm very happy to tell you that. It's like we're finally getting our shit together here. And I'll be honest with you. I'm doing this alone. It's way more work than I thought it was going to be. The work is involved, booking guests. That's the problem. I woke up this morning. I slept in late. I overslept the alarm. And I woke up and I thought, you know, my first thought is, I'm complaining. You know, it's like Joe Walsh said years ago in the song, sometimes I complain, I can't complain, but sometimes I still do. Right, that's it. And my first thought is, what the hell am I going to talk about tonight? Well, 10 minutes looking at the news, I got it all down. And so I'm starting in a little rhythm here, but booking the guests is it's not a pain. It's just very time consuming. It's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. Who can do what day, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. So, but anyway, I am starting to get ahead of it after doing this for 8 weeks. And you don't want to get too far ahead of it when you're starting, because no one will come on because the show's not on yet. So no one's ever seen it. So there's that. Yeah. Bitch. Okay. So here's the deal. I don't have a guest tonight. We're going to talk about the news, some other stuff. If you want to call in and talk about anything you want, anything, you go to this. There's on the screen, you can see it. There's a URL there, jimatnight.com/call. If you go to jimatnight.com, just the front page of the website, there's a link to call in on the menu. There's a very giant blue button on the top of that screen on that page, and you just press that and check your camera and mic and get the crap out of your teeth and comb your hair. There's a preview screen, and you're on. It's simple. You know, David was on last night. David called in from San Francisco, longtime caller, and he made a point. I have to thank him. He made a point to say that. It's really simple. It is. And if you don't want your face on the screen, there's a drop-down on the preview screen where you choose your camera. Most devices only have one, but you can still, if you have more than one, you can make a choice. But on that drop-down, one of the choices is always no video. And you can check that, and then we'll hear your mic, but we won't see your picture. I know a lot of people, you know, internet, oh my God, it's, yeah, we can't troll if people know who we are. Oh, fuck you. this medium is not made for trolling, and yet here we are. It's like, just shit. All right, the other thing that's on the screen below you, too, right there, see? It says text and voicemail. There's the number, 408-458-5088. It's the easiest number to remember in the entire goddamn world, and we got it by chance. 408-458-5088. Got that? You can send me a text at any time. I don't read them during the show. I don't. But they will log. I'll see them afterwards. And you can leave us a 30-second voicemail if you call that number, too. And if you entertain me enough, I'll play your voicemail on the air. I will. And also, those of you on Rumble especially, thank you for engaging in the chat. I don't read the chat during the show. And I know I've gotten shit about this, and I don't care. I don't care. You know why? You should call me up. That's why. Okay, we're doing things a little differently here. There's nothing more boring than watching somebody read chat on television. It's like, you know, okay, I'm calling this television for lack of a better term. Whatever there's not, really, and honestly, there's no one's actually come up with a term for what we're doing here. I mean, I guess it's a talk show, but what is this medium? Is it television? You know, is it internet TV? What do you call it? I mean, no one's thought of that yet. I was telling somebody in the industry, matter of fact, you know, the people at Talkers Magazine ran an article about us in July. I was talking to somebody over there, very nice of them, and I said, well, it's a vodcast. That's what I'm calling it, VOD. Cast, as in video on demand, even though we're doing it live. I'm calling it a vodcast. There's no one's come up with a name for this yet. So there you go. So anyway, yeah, you can call me. You can leave a voicemail. And yes, I encourage you to engage in the chat on Twitter on Rumble. But I'm not going to read it during the show. Maybe I'll read it afterwards, but not during the show. No, I won't do that. So what do we got going on today? The other thing I ought to mention, too, I find this kind of interesting. We had an unusually large number of viewers after in the archive for the show last night, even though we didn't have a guest, and I'm wondering, is that because I titled the show Dogs and Cats Sleeping Together? Is that the reason? You know, I'm starting to get kind of good at kind of these catchy little titles for these programs, and also the little thumbnails, too, which, unfortunately, Rumble is the only place that will take them. So, you know, I upload one to Rumble every afternoon, and, yeah, I don't know why that is. It's just because they seem to have their shit together more than everybody else. That's why. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if that's the reason. You tell me. I don't know. You can call me up. What do you want to talk about? Your marriage? You want to talk about shopping? We had a wonderful discussion with David last night about shopping at Trader Joe's, which is great. And you know something? Here's the deal. Trader Joe's is basically like the quirky version of Aldi's. I don't know if you have Aldi's where you're at, and I don't think there's a lot of Aldi's west of the Mississippi. It's creeping across the country from east to west. It's a German company, and they're like Trader Joe's in the sense that it's basically mostly staples, stuff you buy all the time. It's strictly groceries, like Trader Joe's, and they have, and it's all, like Trader Joe's too, they use almost entirely their own brands, their own in-house brands. About 90-95% of the stuff there is their own in-house stuff. I've read in the business trades that they want to get it 100%. They never will, because they do sell Coca-Cola, and you got to sell Coke. They also sell a few General Mills cereals, like Frosted Flakes. They sell stuff that they know people want. So, but other than that, they have knockoffs. And just like Trader Joe does. Trader Joe's is a little more creative. You know, you go in there, they have that. Like, I did a creative dinner tonight for the lovely wife. I did a stir-fry, mixing two of their things, their vegetable rice stir-fry and their shrimp stir-fry. I put those things together, added some sausage. Got you're going to town, you know, you got a meal. Nobody in America cooks anymore. Now, also, I'm a fantastic cook. And that's one of the reasons my wife loves me. She didn't leave me for this reason. I do the cooking here. I do the shopping here. I enjoy both. Okay, so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I don't care if you guys care or not. All right, what happened today? So I'll tell you what happened today. First of all, I want to comment on yesterday. And yesterday was the McCarthy ouster in the House of Representatives. Our friend David Strom, the associate editor of HotEye.com, had a fantastic column he did today, this morning, and it's just called Thoughts on the McCarthy Ouster. And he pretty much pegged this the way I pegged this, and that is, you know, you can make arguments both ways whether McCarthy was doing a good job or not, but kicking him out at this time is a disaster. And it is. I mean, and, you know, I bitch and moan about the fact that the Democrats are basically the high school student council, and now the Republicans, we're the fucking idiots. You know, it's like it was stupid, and we do this constantly. We're constantly shooting ourselves in the foot. But anyway, Strom mentioned this, and I think this is the general consensus in the conservative community right now, is that, you know, just when we're getting all this dirt on Hunter Biden and the country's going to hell because of his policies and all this sort of stuff, what do? We start our own distraction. You know, and the Democrats are laughing, and I understand on the House floor, they literally did laugh when this went through. The Democrats laughed. Of course they're laughing. We're stupid. It's like, shit, you know? And the other thing about Matt Gaetz, too, you know, okay, so Gaetz' complaint is that basically McCarthy's rhino in conservative clothing. That's his complaint, that, you know, it's like at some point somebody has to stop the spending, all that sort of stuff. All very true, and that's what Strom says too. But, they had a four-seat majority. They had a four-seat majority. You're not going to get shit done with a four-seat majority. And also, I agree with David, and I agree with a lot of people who said this today, and Newt Gingrich too. It's astonishing how much McCarthy did get accomplished with a four-seat majority. So now, they've blown this up. They got a way. I don't quite understand how this works. They got this who's the guy? It's not McCarthy. It's McMaster. Patrick, the guy who took his place. There's a pro tem. There's a temporary speaker, but apparently the temporary speaker has no power. They can't do anything until they get a real speaker. Something like that. I don't quite understand how that works. But the thing is, the person who comes in, no matter who it is, they're going to have the same problem. In other words, and I agree, I don't think you would find somebody to do the job better than McCarthy did. And yeah, you could make an argument it wasn't going well. You could. But under the circumstances, you know, shit, what can you do? You had a four-seat majority, and the Democrats have the other two branches. You know, what are you expecting, the world? You know, what do you want, champagne? I mean, shit. Yeah, spending is out of control. At some point, somebody has to say enough. Somebody. Somebody's got to fall on their sword in Congress and say, we're going to stop this right now. I'd like to think you'd be a president. I think a president, executive leadership needs to do this. You know, that, okay, you know, Clinton did it, and Clinton, you know, it begs repeating. Clinton had a very hostile Congress, you know? I mean, in 96, when Newt Gingrich's Contract for America went through, at that point, you know, the Republicans were running the whole thing, and they still balanced the budget. And, you know, and kudos to Gingrich. I mean, he has always said that Clinton was an excellent negotiator. Both those guys were, and they knew it, and they knew how to do the dance. They did the dance, and they did it, and it worked. So then you get to Barack Obama, who can't bother himself with actually getting his hands dirty politically. He won't do that. He's not going to go down to Congress. You know, he just said, we're going to do it my way, or it's not going to happen. And it didn't happen, except for Obamacare, which is a joke. Obamacare is a complete, utter joke. I mean, you have to understand this. This Obamacare accomplished nothing. Of all the stuff it was supposed to do, no, the problem, okay, you can, yeah, a lot of people got their insurance rates lowered. The problem is an equal number of people got their insurance rates increased, and it did not have to do with how much money you made. A lot of rich people got their insurance rates decreased. A lot of poor people got their insurance rates increased. It was because it's a bureaucratic boondoggle. It's a 2,100-page bill. I keep getting back to this, but this is, you got to understand this. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi very, very famously said, we're going to have to pass the bill to find out what's in it, which is the stupidest thing. I mean, you know, at that point, you know, you should shoot every person in Congress. I mean, that's just the dumbest thing ever. So Fox News, and I don't know who this person was, from what I understand, it was a woman. They assigned a reporter when this thing first came out, or when the final draft was made, to read it cover to cover. And that's all she did, 40 hours a week. It took her a month. It took her 28 days to read this 2,100-page bill. And she's probably, to this day, the only single person who's read the whole thing. Yeah, that's great. That's a great way to make laws, isn't it? What a bunch of bullshit. And so, all right, I understand where Gates is coming from. We're still running the government the same way, and at some point it has to stop, because if it doesn't, the government will collapse. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we are $32 trillion in debt. So, okay, we're never going to pay all that back, ever. That's true. But we're dangerously reaching the point where we would not be able to maintain this debt. That's the real problem. We won't be able to service it. So there's, I can't remember the woman's name, because I actually looked it up the other day, Lionel something. She's a novelist. She wrote a book about 10 years ago. It was a novel about what happens to a formerly wealthy family, but it was basically about the United States, about what happens when some president in the future, I think the book takes place in 2038, I think, I'm not sure, basically says we're defaulting on the debt. We're not paying it back, you know, and basically society basically crumbles because of this, and it would. It would. So, you know, like Murray Sabin has said, we are dangerously reaching the point where if the interest rates go up even a little bit farther, we won't be able to afford the interest on that debt. And you can't raise taxes fast enough to cover it. And not only that, the real problem with raising taxes, which is the reason, one of the reasons I became a conservative after being a red-blooded, hot-bodied liberal, is that the thing about taxes is that when you lower taxes, the government actually takes in more money. Now, do I have to explain how this works? All right, I will, if you don't understand. Okay, so you're thinking, okay, taxes are at, right now, I think the highest rate is 37%. Reagan, if I'm right, lowered them 27%. Okay, so let's say we're going to lower the taxes. Let's just for ballpark purposes here, let's just say we're going to lower the tax rate like one third, right? Okay, so the government is now taking, all right, on the surface, the government is taking in less money per person, right? They're taking in a third less money from everybody. I'm trying to make this really simple. This is actually really complex, but this is the way this works. So, okay, but for corporations, for businesses, they're paying a third less than they were previously. So now they have money, more money they can put back in their business. And because the problem is businesses rely, and the wonderful, wonderful thing about capitalism is competition. So, okay, and everyone says, well, you know, some owner's just going to pocket that money. Well, no. In the vast majority of instances, the owners plow that money back into the business so they can get a bigger share of market share, right? So everybody does that. So now part of doing that is you got to hire more people, right? So you hire more people, and then you have more people on your payroll, and because you're paying less in taxes, you're basically paying this money now to a bunch of new employees. Those people have to pay taxes, and you can go into the assumption they either weren't working before or weren't making as much money as you're paying them. That's the reason people take a new job, usually. All sorts of reasons. Like I said, I'm making this very simple. So those people are now paying taxes. And they're paying more taxes than they were before. And so because of that, the amount of revenues actually going into the federal government actually goes up. Now, we've never reached the part. There's obviously a curve here where at some point, if you lower the taxes too low, that would cease to take effect. But we've never even come close to experiencing that. Every time in American history the federal taxes have been lowered, the revenues into the government have gone up. Every single time. So, and Clinton, who seemed to be the only Democrat in frickin' history who understood economics, he got this. He knew this. So, and I can't remember, did they actually lower taxes during Clinton's term? Maybe not. But I know they didn't raise them. I know that. He resisted that. The brilliant thing about Clinton as an economist, okay, so when he came into office, it was after George Bush Sr., and we had 12 years of what's now called the Reagan Revolution, and things were going along just great, just fantastic. You could make an argument that the reason Bush lost re-election is that he steadfastly promised he wouldn't raise taxes, and he ended up doing it. And I got to admit, I cannot remember what the rates were. I can't remember how much. But he was so steadfast in that promise that it basically cost him election. It was extremely public, you know, just because he was so steadfast on the promise and he broke it. And that might, well, and also the fact that, what's his name? The businessman ran against him. Oh, God, I wanted to say DeSantis, but what is his name? Oh, shit, it's on the tip of my tongue. The guy ran the, well, anyway, he got 19% of the vote. And that probably cost Bush the election, too. So Clinton comes in. And there's this apocryphal story, I don't know if it's true, but it's been rumored for years and years and years, that basically at his first cabinet meeting, Clinton turned to the cabinet and said, I don't care what we have to do, and I don't care whose idea it is. I want to make certain that in 4 years' time, when I'm up for re-election, the economy is running like a top. And he said, I don't care what side of the aisle these ideas come from. We're going to do whatever works. And the first thing he realized is that what was going on right now, or at least it was pointed out to him or whatever, was working quite well. And so instead of being the stupid Democrat most Democrats are and immediately raising taxes, he let the whole thing ride. He did nothing. And you're saying, well, how is doing nothing getting something accomplished? Well, sometimes, folks, it is. And, you know, you should know that about your own life and your own business, your career, too. Sometimes doing nothing is better than doing something. And this was one of those cases where he just let it ride. And that alone was brilliant. He didn't do a thing. Now, history will record that he had a pretty rough first year. Almost all presidents do, because it's really hard to get acclimated to the unusualness of this office and this position. I mean, even Trump did. I mean, Trump, until in 2017, until they passed the Trump tax cuts in December of that year, Trump basically had 11 months of chaos. you know, but he finally, they got their shit together. And that's the thing. The first year of every presidential term is almost completely wasted. Totally. Nothing gets done. It's so hard to learn how to do this job. And it was for Clinton, too. Clinton had a pretty bad first year. But that one thing, not fucking with the economy, is to his credit. And, of course, as time went on, he really got into the groove, and him and Gingrich ended up negotiating a whole bunch of stuff, you know, and they had the first balanced budget yet ever. And leave it to the, you know, to Clinton's brilliance for a Democratic president to stand up during the State of the Union and say the era of big government is over. I mean, I've said this before. Since Kennedy and his unfortunately cut short demise, until in that time frame, that's 60 years now, we've had only three great presidents: Reagan, Clinton, and Trump. And the fact that the people say Trump is evil, this is starting to piss me off more and more. It's like, what do you want? This guy did a good job. And that's the other thing. He's already been president once. We know what's going to happen. But the problem is it scares the people in the swamp, because there's a whole bunch of people that know that if Trump becomes president again, they're going to lose their jobs. And they should. That's the other thing. Yeah, they should lose their jobs. And Trump has brought this up too. My friend Tim Conaway, he's running for president, he has also brought this up. Matter of fact, I heard it from him, I think, before he probably heard it. Trump probably heard it from him. I don't know. But about the fact that we don't need term limits for elected officials. We need term presidents for bureaucrats. If you're in the federal government and working at a certain level, whatever the fuck those levels are, I don't know, you know, wherever you're going to draw a line, you know, you shouldn't be able to keep your job for more than 10 or 15 years, you know. And the argument that people make against term limits for elected officials is that, well, the public has the opportunity to remove them anytime they want. But what belies that is Franklin Roosevelt's term as president, who was elected for four terms. If he had lived, he would have served 16 years. And who knows, he might have run again. Who the frick knows, you know? As it was, he died like 3 months into his fourth term. He basically served 13 years, roughly. But the law to give the president term limits was enacted right after his death, because everyone realized we do not want this again. You know, up to that time, there was no term limits for presidents, and presidents could run as many times as they wanted. He was the first president who actually achieved more than two terms. Several tried. Teddy Roosevelt tried for a third term, not consecutive. He quit after two. Then who was the president after that? Woodrow Wilson, is it? Anyway, Roosevelt decided that was bullshit, and he tried to come back. He did not win re-election. He didn't. I think Grover Cleveland tried too, and he's the only president. If Trump wins in 2024, he will be the only president, along with Cleveland, to have non-consecutive terms. They're the only one. But where was I? Okay. So, yeah. So Clinton was brilliant. And I don't care. You know, you know, if you're sitting there and you're saying I'm not a hardcore conservative, well, maybe I'm not. I don't really give a shit. All I care is about, I care about good ideas or people getting shit done. And that's another thing, too. Okay, you know, and Strom brought this up in his, just to close on this, in his piece, it's on Hot Air if you want to see it, about the fact that, you know, matter of fact, I'm going to read you, I cut this out. Here's a quote, here's the ending quote from David's piece on Hot Air. Quote, "It is the outcomes that matter, not just now, but especially for the future. The stakes are high, and Matt Gaetz went all in, holding just a pair of threes." And he's right. But the point is, like he says, it's the outcomes that matter. America doesn't care about results anymore. And, you know, we have marketers, and I talked about this last night too. We have, you know, this Bud Light fiasco and all this shit. We now have marketers that don't know how to market. We have these kids, and yeah, I'm going to call them kids. I don't care. I'm 68. I'm going to be 68 years old next week. You know, screw you. If you're 26 years old, you probably don't know how to do your fucking job. That go to college, they get these majors in marketing, and they end up at these corporations. They decide, well, I'm going to be a social justice warrior. You know, we're gonna sell beer to trans people. And did it ever occur to you that maybe trans people just isn't your audience? You know, I don't. Nothing against trans people per se. And also, you have to understand, and they're kind of looking toward this because this worked. The gay community for certain products is a very, very good audience, mostly because, relatively speaking, they don't have children, and because of that, they have a large disposable income. And also, gay men especially basically know how to live pretty fabulously. So if you're selling like cruises or like fine wine or anything that's basically considered a high-quality product, you, God bless you, you know, market to the gay men because like they love that crap, and they can afford it. They will buy it. Now, if you're selling Bud Light, what the fuck are you talking about? No, first of all, there's no trans people. This is the thing, you know, this community has gone on and on about this transphobia, violence against trans people. There are no trans people. Now, I'm talking statistically, yes, they are trans people. I've known a couple. I know a couple of trans people. You know, there are trans people. Statistically, there aren't. There's 330 million people in this country. You wrap your mind around that. I have noticed that the difference between CEOs and people who run companies, the difference between the people who are successful on a national scale and the people that aren't, are the people who actually realize how many people are actually in the country, how big your audience actually is. And I got to be honest with you, I've run firms in the past. It took me years to figure that out, that holy shit, there's a lot of fucking people. So the thing is, so who are you marketing to? And especially if you're using traditional advertising, no one wants to talk about this. But the reason Netflix and Amazon Prime and all these people are inserting ads into their streaming shit is because television advertising still works. It's still probably, along with advertising on Facebook, and I hate to give those people credit, but still, because I hate their guts. Along with Facebook advertising, television advertising is still the most effective type of advertising there is. But you have to basically give it a really good budget because it's really true. Basically, people won't buy anything they see on TV until they've seen a commercial at least seven times. So you have to make certain that one person sees that commercial seven times. So to do that, you basically have to run that commercial 200 times a week. You know, that's basically what you got to do. And so if you have that sort of money, you can make it work. But these kids, they get out of college, and they think, well, I'm going to be a social justice warrior, and they don't seem to care about sales at all. They don't care about their audience. They don't care about what the desired demographic is for their product. They do not care. They're just going to change the world. Fuck you. It's like, Jesus Christ. I mean, what a bunch of bullshit. It really, really bothers me. It really does. I've said this three or four times on the show. I'm going to say it again. So Johnny from Jesse Waters' show, Prime Time on Fox News, Johnny's the guy that Jesse sends out onto the street, just like Bill O'Reilly sent Jesse out 20 years ago. So Johnny's at Princeton. He's interviewing this woman, the student, young woman, and he said, well, what are you majoring in? And she said, I'm majoring in marketing. And he says, what do you think about that Bud Light thing? And she says, man, I wish I'd been around to help Dylan McVaney out through that. He didn't get enough support. And Johnny says, yeah, but sales for the product tanked. And she just smiles. She doesn't say anything. You know why? She would have done that anyway. She's not going to say. She knows it's bullshit, but she's still going to do it. We are training people in college now. And David talked about this last night. God bless him on his call. We are training people to basically, they're buffoons. It's not just that they don't know how to do business. They don't. And most of them, of course, are not taking majors in business. They're majoring in psychology or archaeology or not. I should have mentioned archaeology. That's actually a pretty cool thing. But there's a lot of, you know, gender studies. What the fuck is that, you know? Although some of the biggest hires in corporate America right now are in the DIE, the DIE component. That's actually diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know? That's some of the biggest hires there are. Although there's starting to be now a backlash of this, especially in the UK. The UK has basically given, they've thrown all the trans bullshit out the window. Just today, the PM, Prime Minister of England, he said, the quote was, a man is a man and a woman is a woman. That was the quote. And then there was this, I think this was in the UK too, where there was some, there was a track and field meet, or was it swimming, where the women said, if you let trans men into the competition, we won't compete, and nobody showed up. Nobody showed up. No trans men showed up either. Nobody showed up for the meet. No one. It's like people are starting to get really pissed off, and it's like no, a ham sandwich is a ham sandwich, man. You can't tell me it's roast beef. You know, it's not. I got kind of what worked up there, didn't I? Holy shit! Give me a call, okay? Jimandknight.com/call. Interested in what you have to say. You can tell me I'm full of shit. It's fine. If you insult me, maybe I'll cut you off. Maybe not. Who knows? Anyway, that was David's piece today. And meanwhile, in Europe, okay, I titled today's show, Protecting Us From Ourselves. And to those of you who haven't read the description, here's the description. Appellate court rules that, yes, the Biden administration did collude with big tech to stifle free speech. That's what I wrote for the description. In Switzerland yesterday, a writer was jailed for 60 days for writing an article for calling a woman a fat lesbian. And I don't know if she's fat. I've not seen a picture of her, but apparently she actually is a lesbian. That wasn't a problem. He called her a fat lesbian, and for that, for they said spewing hatred, he spent 60 days, and he got sentenced to 60 days in jail. And I want to point out, this is not a civil lawsuit. This is a criminal lawsuit. He was found to have broken a law in Switzerland. They have a law about spreading undue hatred. That's what the law is. And, you know, I want to address this, because you have to understand, first of all, we are the only single country in the world that has what is our First Amendment. You go Britain, Canada, nowhere else. They don't actually have a part of their constitution that says you are guaranteed free speech as a citizen. We're the only single ones. So meanwhile, okay, and then getting back to the description I read about today's show, what's happening is that, so it's like 17 states, I think it is, or 25, I can't remember. They have sued the Biden administration for colluding with big tech to stifle, to change social media posts to their liking. That's basically what it is. Now, the original judge that got this lawsuit, he ruled a temporary injunction and told the White House that while this is in court, you have to stop this. He also said during that injunction, he said, it appears that the plaintiffs will probably end up winning this case. He said, it appears right now that will happen. But, you know, this was before the case went to court. And believe it or not, I just, you know, you want to know where these people's minds are. The White House actually appealed the injunction. Now, there's not a verdict. We're not a verdict. They appealed the injunction to the appellate court to say they did not want to stop doing this. They couldn't even stop temporarily. It's a temporary injunction while this thing actually goes to trial. So they appealed the injunction, and today or yesterday, the appellate court came down and said, not only you guys got to stop this, you got to stop it right fucking now. The appellate court was actually harsher than the original judge. And the appellate court also concluded that it appears likely that the plaintiffs are going to win the case. And the original judge, I can't remember his name, Doherty or something like that, he called it a travesty. He said, this is the worst thing that's happened in 200 years. I mean, and it is. That's the thing. It actually is. You have free speech in the United States. Now, the problem here, and it is a true legal problem, is although the government has no business telling a private company how to edit their posts, the private company can do whatever they want. So this doesn't, like, you know, if Mark Zuckerberg decides he's going to take out every post on Facebook about Donald Trump, he has the right to do that. He does. But the White House was working undercover and said, well, we're not really doing it. And the judges, all the judges in this case, by the way, the appellate court decision was unanimous. I think it was three judges, all three of them. So four judges have ruled on this so far, that the government doesn't have any business trying to suggest to these companies that they do this. You can't pass on suggestions. You can't pass on, you know, we recommendations. You can't do any of that shit. You can't. And then right now, the injunction is still in place. The White House can't contact these firms about these topics at all. At all. They've ruled that the appellate court ruling was actually worse than the original ruling for the White House. It was. And they are probably going to lose. That's right. Because this is the government censoring speech. One of the judges in the ruling, he said, and I never thought about this before, it's not a choice for the social media company if they don't take the recommendation, that they suffer undue consequences, which is what the White House was threatening. The White House was threatening all these the thing is, you do this, or we're going to cut off Section 130, or we're going to raise your taxes, or all sorts of mechanism they suggested they would do if they didn't follow what the recommendations of the White House. And the judge ruled, very rightly so, that that's not a choice. You say that if you're being threatened with undue consequences if you don't do something, you don't have a choice. And that's right, you don't. Not everybody in this country is crazy. I'm glad to see this. So anyway, that happened in. I brought the thing up on Switzerland because they don't have the First Amendment over there. So they have a law that says if you spread undue hatred through speech, you can go to jail. Now we don't have that law, and we shouldn't, because who's going to define what hatred is? I've said this before, not on this show, on a previous radio show. And Gutfeld brought this up on the 5 just this afternoon. I'm glad he did. I just happened to watch it, or a few minutes of it, while he was talking about the fact that, or maybe it was on the show last night. I can't remember. But at any rate, here's the point, and that is, you have the left will go on and on and on about the fact that MAGA Republicans are trying to destroy democracy. But historically, every single government that's gone into totalitarianism has done it from the left. Jamal Bowman's office called Republicans Nazis. Well, you know what Nazis stand for? The translation of Nazis? The National Socialist Party. They were socialists. And how did they end up with a dictatorship? You wonder. I clipped this too to go along with this discussion. Hold on one second here. I can do this. I can do it. About the fact that, yeah, here it is. In Venezuela, Maduro, the dictator there, has now commanded every single person. He says he does a weekly show on TV there. And by the way, they have no real media. All the media is run by the state. And I do want to point out, this is very important, 30 years ago, Venezuela was the richest country in South America. And now it's not even a shadow of itself. It's basically, it's nothing. There's people killing their pets for food. That's how this went. And why? Socialism. This is the thing. If you can look at me and you can tell me, well, capitalism sucks. I can't necessarily disagree with you. Capitalism does suck, but it's still the best thing going on the planet. It's the only thing that works even reasonably well. Nothing else works. And why doesn't socialism work? Well, yeah, communism is a great idea on paper, but that's the problem. It's on paper. It doesn't. When you put it into practice, there's all sorts of shit that goes wrong. And here in Venezuela, is electing this Maduro guy, who basically, once he got elected, they don't no longer have free elections. They've ended up putting their thumb on the scale for all of them. He's been there now for almost 30 years, if I'm right. I'd say it's like they have a dictatorship now. No one eats, and no one makes any money, and no one has a job. It's wonderful. So now he said on his TV show, he said, I never got to the point. He said, If you're a good socialist in Venezuela, you must have a TikTok account. A TikTok account. He posts stuff to TikTok all the time. And he says, make posts about how great socialism is, how great the Venezuelan government is, and be funny. That's what he said. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, TikTok. Yeah. Run by the Chinese. Owned by the Chinese. So, access. I just find... are we're stupid. We're fucking stupid. What the hell is this? You know, we are giving our data to the Chinese. It's bad enough that you gave your data to Facebook. You're thinking, oh my God, look at all this shit. This is free. I get to communicate with all my friends. No, you know how you paid for it? With all, Facebook knows everything about you. And why? Because you told them. That's the thing. You told them what your favorite movies are. You told them what your favorite TV shows are, your favorite albums. You told them all that shit. They know everything about you. And so it's easy for them to, that's the reason, I mean, and the thing is, they fell ass backwards into this. They did. They had no plans for this at all. But because if you know about the history of Facebook, and I never saw that damn movie, I never did, but if you know about the history of it, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, now he did start it. There's no doubt about that. He started it. He basically didn't see the potential in it until it was almost too late. He almost closed the thing up because he got bored. And, you know, a lot of developers are like that. I'm a programmer. I understand. You know, it's like they get bored with their little toy and, you know, and he almost closed it up. But the thing is, but what he finally realized, or somebody finally got through his head, is that is this will be, and it is now, the best single advertising medium ever devised. Why? Because Facebook knows everything about you. And there's, how many people are there? 1.6 billion or something like that? I think there's and at least half the United States is on Facebook. So you got 125, 130 million people, 150 million people, and they individually know everything about you. So you're talking about targeting advertising? There's no better place to do it. And actually, if, you know, anyone who advertises on Facebook, it's actually quite complex. I mean, I have run the Facebook ad manager. I've run it. It's not for the faint of heart. It takes quite a while to get up to speed. But the thing is, if you can do it, it's really cheap, effective advertising. And that's the reason Facebook makes boatloads of money. That's the reason. So, yeah. So you told Facebook all about you. And now, but you know, okay, you did that, right? Now we got the Chinese. Oh, look at this app. Look at all these people dancing, blah, 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 blah. So now we're handing our data over to the Chinese. It's bad enough that we're giving it to Zuckerberg, you know? It's bad enough, you know? And then he gives $500 million to rig the election. But now we're giving our data to the Chinese. Now the Chinese know all about you too. Yeah, you're really smart. Yeah, good job there. Yeah. And the people saying, oh, I need my choice of social networks. I can't live without this. You know something? You can. You can live without it. I do. I'm doing just fine. I'm on the internet tube TV. It's like, you know, no, you can live without this. I've told you this. I'm not on social media. You do a search for me, you won't find me other than this show. You'll find this show. This show is on all the major platforms. That's true. And yeah, you want to call me a hypocrite, but I'm not on TikTok. I wouldn't even do that. I got on TikTok once. My former employer asked me, I worked for a conservative news service, and they asked me to check out TikTok. Do we want to put a presence up there? And I did. And I was appalled. Because first of all, this is what this generation considers entertainment. Jesus Christ. My God. I do not consider the fact that of somebody watching some woman put on makeup or somebody go through there, tell me what's in their refrigerator. That is not entertainment. I don't. It's like, you know, you have to, I don't care. You call me an old fogey all you want. That's stupid. You know, so yeah, now Maduro over in Venezuela, he's telling everybody in the country they got to get on TikTok. Jeez, I wonder why. I don't know. What the fuck? We're all going to hell. We are. It's like, you know, and you know, that's what Strom's point is. I'm going full circle in his article today about the fact that, you know, this is not, I don't think this is hyperbole. We're close to losing the country. And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about Democrats versus Republicans. I'm talking about between a national debt, the fact that we're basically enabling our enemies. We're enabling them. We have a president who's basically paid off by them, as far as I can tell, allegedly, my opinion. But it seems like that's what's going on here. And no one does anything about it. So I know that I asked Jeff Meyer what he wants to talk about tomorrow. So I don't want to blow this, but he says, I want to talk about the fact that all this stuff's going on and nothing's moving. That's what he told me. And that's what we'll talk about. Because he's right. No one's doing anything about anything. And so then the Republicans, on the verge of actually basically showing that the president of the United States is completely corrupt, they blow the whole thing up. Yeah, nice work. I don't know about Matt Gaetz. I really don't. I said this last night. I've thought this for a long time. I don't know what to think. There's part of me that says he's a patriot, and there's part of me that says he's just a complete fucking idiot. I've also heard people tell me he's an egomaniac too. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't. It may be that the whole thing revolves around him. I don't know. And the other thing is, apparently he has a beef with McCarthy because of the, he was, these sexual assault allegations that came up like 3 years ago, which has never left the House Ethics Committee. They apparently have a report finished and no one's ever seen it, including Gaetz himself. They've never released it. What are they waiting for? They're probably waiting for the right time to embarrass him. I don't know. But apparently, and I don't understand the vagaries of this, or the inside workings, but supposedly McCarthy could have stopped it or something like that. McCarthy wasn't responsible for it, but he could have stopped it, and he didn't, or something like that. And Gaetz has really held it against him. And I got to admit, if I was accused, falsely accused of sexual assault, and I've seen this allegation, and it appears that it was just complete, utter political bullshit. That's on the offhand appearance. I mean, yeah, I reserve right to change my judgment in case it looks like he actually did assault somebody. But this is like, kind of like Brett Kavanaugh assaulting Christine Baisley Ford, All right, it happened 40 years ago. You don't remember the date. You don't remember the time. You don't remember the place. And all the witnesses that you said saw it said they didn't know what the fuck you were talking about. Yeah, that works. Let's go with that. Like, Jesus, shit. I can say the Democrats are evil, despicable, and all that. But I'll say this about the Republicans: they're fucking stupid. Blow this thing up, Jesus Christ! And those of you who watch the show, I got a lot of my friends watch the show. They say, Jim, when did you become so political? I've always said this. One of my friends, a Republican friend of mine, says, I'm more conservative than he is. But I said this. I'm going to call him as I see him. I'm not pitching. I got to give Sean Hannity credit. I mean, that's his modus operandi. He will never, ever say anything bad about any Republican. God bless him. I can't operate that way. If you're stupid, I'm gonna point it out. And these Republican people, they're stupid. Jesus. Okay. No one's calling me. Give me a call, man. I want to talk to you. JimAtKnight.com/call. Push the button. It's simple. You can do it. So I got this really interesting thing here. So, I'm using a green screen. I had this wonderful shot of downtown Minneapolis here. And by the way, people have asked, that's not the view out of our window, but it's pretty darn close, except we're going the other direction. We're on the other end of downtown from where this picture is taken. But yeah, you can pretty much see this from our studio here. We're at Broadway and Central in Northeast, which is right across the river from downtown, the Mississippi River. And I've said this before, and it's really it fascinates me if you've ever been there. Northeast Minneapolis, which is the name of the neighborhood I'm in, is more like Brooklyn than any place in America outside of Brooklyn. Three things. First of all, it used to be a separate city, and now it's part of Minneapolis. This was originally the city of St. Anthony, which was on the east side of the river, Minneapolis. They merged. Secondly, all right. You gotta shoot me and put me out of pasture. All right, okay. Secondly, it used to be considered a dump shithole neighborhood. I've been living here for 30 years. I had friends who wouldn't come over here because they were afraid of getting mugged. There was a very famous thing when my wife and I first got married. This is going back. Yeah, this is like early 90s. So there's a famous anchor man on television here, Don Shelby. He's still around. He's still kicking around. And he's on TV on WCCO News one night, and we're watching. And Shelby says, well, okay, so the safest neighborhood in Northeast Minneapolis last year was Northeast Minneapolis. And he said there were only, and actually, I'm not going to name it. There's a subsection of Northeast Minneapolis, a sub-neighborhood. that he named, and he said there were only 3 911 calls from this neighborhood the entire year. And my wife looks at me and says, "Didn't you make 3 911 calls?" And I did. They were all from me. I won't get into what they were, but yeah. First of all, the woman next door, the apartment next door, was getting beat up by her boyfriend. I called the police. We were across the railroad tracks from a large used car dealership, and some alarm went off there. Wouldn't stop. I called the police. And then the bridge over the railroad tracks outside of our house, some guy, I saw the accident too. It's like he must have been drunk out of his mind, because not only did he lose control of his car, it ended up on the sidewalk, and then it ended up hanging over the bridge. And I think, well, you know, I think these guys need to get out of their car. And I called the police. Oh my God. Anyway, and what was the third thing? Separate city, used to be a dump, and I can't remember. Anyway, it's like, why do you watch this? I gotta admit, I'm having fun doing it. So I got one more thing I want to bring up tonight. You never called. It just bothers me. You never call. You never call, and I don't know what to make of it. Do we still have a relationship? You know, am I going to have to drink the wine by myself? You never call. You don't. All right. Here's the last thing I got tonight. This is from Outkick, a guy named Matt Regal, who I've never heard of before. And I got to say, you know, all these writers, you know, that's the problem with a lot of these writers. And of course, most of them are leftists. I have to point that out, because the thing is, I don't know. I never know if this is a coincidence or not. A lot of these writers have figured out if they say shit that's completely outrageous, they won't make the news, right? You know this. I mean, this is AOC's, and I brought this up before. You know, Northeast Minneapolis, this is Ilhan Omar is our congressional representative here. That woman who married her brother, who's having sex with her relatives. Who the hell knows? I don't know. Allegedly. Crazy people. But anyway, so these people, they figure this out. If you say absolutely outrageous stuff, you will end up making the news, and all publicity in America is good publicity, so you never really know if people mean the shit they're saying or they're just saying it for giggles and to get noticed. You never know. But here's a writer. He writes for Outkick. His name is Matt Regal. And I got to give props on this, because I don't know if he was just pissed off or if he's trying to get attention. Here's the headline. Problematic because it's crap. It's time to do away with Sweet Caroline. So he's watching one of the baseball playoff games yesterday, and he says he can't stand this song. Neil Diamond, Sweet Caroline. Everyone's singing. They're all drunk. He is so over it. And, you know, and Ed Morrissey on Hot Air, he's the editor of Hot Air. I mean, he wrote a thing. He said, well, you know, it's really not that bad a song. And you got to give props to Neil Diamond, man. This guy wrote so much music that's basically in the public consciousness. I mean, he wrote most of the Monkees' biggest hits. It goes back forever, you know. And he was writing. He wrote from the Brill Building before he was even a singer. It's like, I mean, and not only that, he is so insanely rich. And you, folks, I got to tell you, if you can do it, the best way to make money in America is become a songwriter. Because you don't know this, but songwriters get paid completely separately from performers. And not only that, we're the only country in America where if you get your song, but every time your song gets played on the radio, and you need a hit to do this, you basically get paid 10 cents on any terrestrial radio station in America. And you may think, well, Jim, that's not a lot of money. Well, if your song gets played 1 bazillion trillion times, it is, and most hits do, you know. I mean, the Beatles are all, well, the 2 songwriters for the Beatles, or 3, you know, if you count Harrison, bless his heart, bless his soul, rest in peace. McCartney is probably worth about $500 million, maybe more. Taylor Swift's already worth $500 million, and she's only been doing this a few years. The money is actually in the songwriting. I have to amend that. That's not really true anymore. That used to be the way it's true. Now, if you reach a certain level, the money's also in the performing. I mean, I did some quick napkin math. Taylor Swift is making a minimum, and this is personally, I'm not talking about the gross. She is personally making about $10 million for every concert she gives in every arena. Personally, She takes them a, they're making about double that. That's what the gross is. Between, I mean, her merch sales are through the roof, you know, but the ticket prices alone, and these are 60,000 seat arenas. And, you know, I've said she's a terrible songwriter. She's great at everything else. She's a fantastic arena performer. She's a great businesswoman. She knows how to service her fans. I mean, I'm not trying to put this woman down, but the music sucks. It does. If you think that's good music, man, you wait a few years till you grow up. That's all I can tell you. But I don't think you're watching this show because I'm an old, old guy. That's my guess. That's my story, folks. I'm sticking to it. All right, tomorrow, Jeff Meyer joins us. We're going to talk to him. Got a bunch of guests lined up for the next couple weeks. I went through a couple of them. Nathan Wooster on Tuesday. I think I got somebody on Monday. That's going to be really interesting if this goes down the way I think it is going to. So, but I can't talk about it until it happens. So, and next Tuesday, I'm turning 68. And we're going to do a show. I'm thinking about having my mother on. Now, I don't know how we're going to, my mother, she's 99 years old. She was a regular guest. And, you know, David even brought this up last night in his call. But very nice of him. He used to call in on my radio shows previously. Used to be a guest. I don't know if we can get her on camera. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I'll get her on the telephone, at least. And she can talk. She's had a fascinating life. She's 99. She lived through the Second World War. I'm gonna preface this with two quick stories about my mom. She'll talk about this. When she was 17, she grew up in a town, a pretty large city in what was then Yugoslavia. Now it's North Macedonia. During the war, in 1941, when she was 17, if I'm right. Now get a little of this. She had her appendix removed with absolutely no anesthesia whatsoever. None, not even local. In other words, they cut into her gut and removed her appendix, and she was conscious. And I've asked her, "Well, Mom, what was that like?" And she said, "Her quote is, it hurt like hell." No shit. And the other thing is, during the war, the last year of the war, her town was occupied, but the German soldiers knew they were losing, and basically they went on a looting spree, and she said they were basically running around all the neighborhoods raping all the young women. And her father, she slept for 3 months every night in a false wall inside a closet, so she wouldn't, her and her sister did escape that fate. So yeah, how do you want to sleep? You want to spend 3 months inside a closet? You want to do that? And you're bitching about your car alarm. I'm bitching about my car alarm. Who am I kidding? It's like, God. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I really appreciate it. I do. I'm starting to like doing this, even though, like, you know, there's a part of me. I'm 68 next week. I'm getting really fucking lazy. I just admit it. I am. I used to be such a workhorse. I mean, I could go and go and go, and I loved doing it. It's like I was going to the gym at 3 o'clock in the morning for years. Now, man, I can spend hours just sitting watching Let's Make a Deal and reading shit on my phone. It's like, I don't know. Have you seen that Tiffany Coin woman on Let's Make a Deal, though? Oh, my God. It's like, holy shit. Yeah. I'm also an old pervert, too. Did I mention that? All right. So, tomorrow, Jeff Meyer. Let me just tell you this, too. We're taking next Thursday off. I'm going for a very long weekend in the UP in Michigan. We're no show next Thursday. Onward and upward from here. Thank you. I really appreciate this. Thanks for watching. Whether it's live or on the playback, I don't care. I don't care. It doesn't make any matter to me. Here's a new end card. Enjoy this. And good night, Uncle Donnie, wherever you are.